welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. This week, we are talking about the paralyzing negativity and your inner chimp. This is something that all of us face, and Dave has a lot of insight that is going to bring us into the topic, but I think the premise here is kind of dealing with negativity and questioning yourself and your ability and your future and how to overcome that a little bit. So, Dave, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, Craig. How about yourself?
It's going good. It's going good. It's hotter than 800 hells here, but that's cool. That's what we expect in June.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, talking about this particular topic here, the thing that sort of brought me around to this and made me think about it, although it turns out that I actually think about this kind of a lot and I didn't really realize it. So there was this article in The New Yorker a little while ago that I came across, and it was talking about this guy by the name of Dr. Steve Peters. And basically in the 90s, this guy came up with what he called the chimp paradox. But I've heard this in different terms in different contexts, and I'll explain that in a minute. But anyway, he was talking about how he explained this to first-year med students about how the mind actually functions. Basically, he said that there's like this contest that's constantly going inside of your brain. There's the rational human side and this ancient chimp part of your brain. And basically, the chimp side is dealing with all of the essential functions. You know, am I getting enough to eat? Do I have enough sleep? Did I get laid last night? You know, all that primitive stuff that we don't really think about, but they're just like these constant urges or distractions that are going on in our lives. It's an extremely powerful side of our brain, and it's also the one that's very much prone to emotion and fear. Now, the interesting fact that he threw out in this article is that, and I didn't actually know this, a chimp is actually about 5 times stronger than a human being. So if you're basically sharing your life with this thing inside of your head, this chimp inside of your head, so to speak, you've got something that's basically outweighing your rational side by almost 5 to 1. And that makes it really, really hard for you to make rational decisions all the time. So this guy, this Dr. Peters, he's like a coach, and he is dealing with athletes. And he's basically teaching them how to manage this inner chimp that's telling them not to do stuff, to do something else, to go the easy path, to basically give up and, you know, go to sleep, go eat that candy bar or whatever, you know, just all kinds of stuff that the chimp is doing against your life. Now, when I studied Buddhist meditation, the way this was referred to was monkey mind, that your mind is basically just this out of control little monkey and it's bouncing all over the place. And the function of meditation is to try to calm it down and bring it, you know, to a level of sanity where you can actually see that this is going on all the time and get a better job of controlling it. But the reason that I was thinking about this was that I was realizing that the thing that has been one of the hardest struggles for me, and I think it's a big struggle for everybody, is that this chimp becomes this constant force that's working against you when you're trying to build a business. It works against everybody, but I think for entrepreneurs, it's like, it's the thing that you're struggling with the most. It's not about your competition. It's not your customers or your market. It's basically this chimp telling you to do anything other than focus on your business from day one. It's basically paralyzing you from making all these decisions and taking actions. So yeah, this is kind of what I wanted to talk about today, is how you deal with your inner chimp, you know?
Yeah, no, I think this is a fantastic thing to talk about. I think we as entrepreneurs face it particularly because there's no backdrop. There's no safety net. There's no corporation behind you. There's no safeguard against if you fail, and even just how to structure your work environment and the things around that. So I think that's why we face it more so than people within corporations, because there's so much structure within a corporation to prop you up and keep you focused and help you stay accountable and emotionally support you a little bit too. But as an entrepreneur, it's all us, and we can get distracted easily. We can get detoured into, you know, a rat hole that has absolutely nothing to do with keeping us productive, but just keeps feeding the fear, like you're saying, keeps feeding the chimp, and just only does bad for us, really, I think, in the end.
Right, right. So in the 5 years that I've been a member of the Micropreneur Academy, there's been a lot of people that come in and they start posting, and then they, you know, talk about their frustrations and say, you know, I have a hard time focusing, or I have a hard time figuring out this idea, or, you know, I went off and I built this other thing over here, but, and I know I'm supposed to be doing customer development, but I really wanted to build this over here. And every single one of these examples is basically just a different manifestation of the chimp in action. So it's causing all sorts of things. It'll distract us. It paralyzes us with fear, because some people just get so freaked out because they're like afraid they're going to make the wrong decision. And that is the chimp in action.
Yeah. So, you know, this reminds me, we had a voicemail from Rob, 6 weeks ago maybe. And yeah, that's exactly what it was talking about. He was basically saying to us, or to me, hey, tell the chimp to take a hike. You need to focus on one thing and do one thing well, even if you're scared of it. And I think you can be scared of failure or success even. I think being afraid of success is very real.
It is absolutely real. In fact, the last time we did our updates on the episode, I actually, when you said, how soon are you going to be launching here? And I said, oh, 4 to 6 weeks. And as soon as I said that number, I had like this visceral reaction, and I was like, oh crap. I just publicly said that I'm launching in 6 weeks, and I'm not 100% certain that I'm going to hit it. And I, you know, just all of a sudden this inner dialogue just started racing along. Well, what if I fail? I mean, now I'm on a podcast. Oh my God, I'm announcing to the world that I'm going to do this. And so there's fear of failure. There's fear of succeeding. Like if I do this launch and I start getting customers, oh my God, I'm going to have to start dealing with payments, and I'm going to have to start dealing with more customer support. And do I have enough bandwidth, and blah, 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 blah. Fear of success, fear of failure. It's all the chimp. It's all coming back to haunt us all the time. It doesn't matter what it is or who you are or where you're at in there. There's a chimp that's out there waiting to get you.
Yeah, and that's really the first step, though, of how to hack this problem, though, is to sort of admit to yourself that there's going to be bad things potentially that can happen, whether it's success or failure that you end up achieving or as a result of your work that it was success or failure. The first thing to say is, these things are potentially, you know, possible in down the road. And for you, it was customer support and payments and all these things that will happen as a result of just launching. So I think that's the first thing to say is, shit's going to happen, good or bad, and I need to admit that to myself so that I can then take the steps to mentally prepare myself for what that could look like.
Right. Or in some cases, like, there's a guy that I've talked to on a semi-regular basis, and it seems like he's kind of constantly stuck in the mud. And it always seems like he's afraid of just making the wrong step in any direction whatsoever. And, you know, I kind of would love if he would actually just realize that there was this chimp that was holding him back, and he could actually sit down and write what those consequences could be. Like if he just basically said, well, okay, what happens if you take that wrong step? And then he could sort of analyze it, because I know he's got a strong rational brain he could do this with. He could look and just say, oh, well, all right, so if I take the wrong step, maybe I waste 4 weeks doing that step. All right, well, is that all that bad? Well, no. Well, what could come out of that? Well, I might have to redo the work, or I might have to throw it away and do something entirely different.
Might have to hire a different developer.
Might have to hire a different developer to do it. Might have to take a different direction. Maybe just it's a bad idea. You know, it's like all of those things, if you just hash through it and say, what's the worst that could really happen of this? All of a sudden that takes kind of the fear away from that if you've written it out and you're like, oh, well, you know, this post-apocalyptic world that I keep envisioning here isn't really as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah.
But if you kind of get it out there, you'll figure that out. So yeah, writing the consequences down of what you're scared of is a positive thing there. There's also a Buddhist technique for this in meditation, if you're inclined to do meditation instead, is basically to envision what that worst thing is. Now, in Buddhism, they take it to an extreme, and you basically are visualizing death of people like loved ones or eventually yourself to try to take away the fear of death, to realize that that's, you know, if you think that that's the worst thing that can happen to you, this helps cope with that fear. So this is the same kind of idea. You can just apply it to your business. You can think of, okay, well, what happens if my business utterly fails and one day I wake up and I'm broke? You know, well, what happens on that? You know, you can lay that out, either write it down or do the meditation on it and have the visualizations, and it's the same thing, right?
Yep. This reminds me a little bit of Tim Ferriss's got a framework kind of like this. He calls it dreamlining, and basically it's the same kind of thing, but it's more of a goal setting activity to basically say kind of where do I want to be, and then what are the steps that could happen along the way, good or bad, and sort of acknowledging to yourself all these potential things could happen, but with that vision in mind. And right. that kind of brings us into the next thing is to say, you know, all right, so I'm here, I'm going to take a certain amount of steps and a path to get to my ultimate goal. And the best way to do that is to get organized and to make a list for the steps you are going to take to keep you along the path that you've decided ahead of time, so that when that chimp comes up, you can then refer to something that you've sort of created ahead of time in hopefully a calm and organized mind that is a little bit dispassionate to the chimp and all of the, you know, the powers and the forces on your mind, to be able to go back to something relatively objective and say, all right, these are the things that I know, or at one time I knew, were going to be good things for my business. This is all I'm going to do. And I think this takes a lot of the guessing game and the emotion out of this process, and can hopefully keep us kind of going down the track that in a logical and objective state we decided was the path we were going to take, right?
Right, right. Now, there's a couple of specific hacks about creating that list that I've heard. One of them is that you've got to create the list like at the end of the day. You don't generally want to do it at the beginning of the next day. Now, I'm pretty bad about that. Sometimes I'll just come into my office and write down a bunch of stuff. But if your monkey mind is particularly strong, then if you don't do that list before, when you get in at the first thing in the morning, then all of a sudden you've got Facebook and Twitter and your email and all this other stuff to distract you. But if you have that list sitting in front of you, you're less likely to get distracted by that right away. At least that's been my experience. I've had better luck actually writing a list down the day before and then come in the morning and look at that and go, all right, that's my plan of attack for the day. I don't have to think about it. That's just where I go.
Yeah, that's the best one I've heard, is that at the end of the day when you're done working, and it can even be just before bed, write down the things you did that day and the things you want to do the next day. And it calms your mind to say, all right, one, I achieved a lot of things today. And then two, the things I know from that I need to do tomorrow are X, Y, and Z. And then when you go to bed that night or you're leaving the office, you're mentally at peace a little bit to say, I did a lot. I moved the business forward. Things are better than I found them today. And so then tomorrow I know exactly what I'm going to do when I come in. There's no question about Facebook or email or Twitter, you know, Slack or anything like that. And you go in and you can start doing some work, right?
Right, right. Now, there's a couple of other hacks that I've read about how you should order that list. And I've tried it both ways. And I find that one works a little bit better for me, but it's not the one that I hear more about. So the two hacks are basically order your list so that your hardest or nastiest task is first, to just get that out of the way first thing in the day. And the other hack is put some easy tasks up front to kind of warm you up and get you going, so that you feel like, hey, I got something done. Hey, you know, it's like you get that sense of accomplishment and success, and it kind of moves you along into the next task. I personally have found that if I start with something really hard, sometimes I can get discouraged. Not all the time. Depends on how big the task is. But if I start with something that's kind of easy, that just gets me into the habit of success and accomplishing things, that one tends to work a little bit better for me. How about you? Do you have a preference?
I guess I kind of do a combination of it. I do. So I'm a big fan of The One Thing, Gary Keller Williams Real Estate. He wrote this book a couple years ago. It's fantastic. The One Thing and Essentialism are two books that I think are fantastic on this point. And the premise really is, what is the, for the one thing at least, the premise is, what is the one thing that I can do today such that by doing this, everything else will become either irrelevant or much easier? And so I try to pair that, I try to pair these together a little bit and say, what is the one thing I can do that is relatively easy that will kind of set the dominoes in action for the rest of them? So it might be a very simple task, but it is kind of the most important thing. And even if it's kind of a subtask of a bigger goal, I do try to get the most important thing done first, even if it's one step along that bigger goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's awesome. Just because I like to think that, wow, I did this one thing, and if nothing else gets done today, at least I did the most important thing.
Right, right. So you definitely get that sense of strong accomplishment from that one thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And momentum, yeah.
But I think in general, regardless of how you decide to organize your list, the point of having the list allows you to focus on basically action instead of sitting there letting your mind go freeform. Well, what might happen if I don't get any customers? Or what might happen if all my customers tell me they don't like the product? Or what might happen if I, you know, suddenly get 100 customer support? I don't know if this sort of happens to you, but I, you know, sometimes I can just sort of get spun off into the what if scenarios. And instead of me actually getting things done, I'm just spinning mental cycles on these what ifs and getting nothing done. So by having a list, it gives me something to focus on. And so that action kind of distracts my mind from going down those crazy paths. Have you had that experience?
Oh, shit. Yeah. I mean, this happens every day. I mean, so for me running a service business, this is particularly, and for you too, right? I mean, SupportVine is going to be a service business ultimately. It's with a lot of software to it. But, you know, it is, what happens if I get 5 customers this week? Or what happens if one of my editors goes on vacation for a week? You know, all these things that could just totally fuck your business are not important, right? I mean, you do everything right. You can to organize and prepare yourself and get ahead of the game. But worrying about these is certainly not doing any good. It's only doing bad. It's one, taking time away from actually doing something about your business. But two, and probably more importantly, it's just creating stress. And stress just pours over into every other part of, for me at least, every other part of my life and my business. It's just horrible.
Right. It's a terrible negative feedback loop. The more I stress, the more I start thinking about these what ifs. Or sometimes I'll just distract myself by stressing out. Like a couple of weeks ago, we did a release for AWPCP. And it turned out there was this image that caused people's images to there was this issue with images that caused all of their images to disappear. And of course, as you can imagine, this doesn't exactly make people very happy when they suddenly look at their classified site and see that there's no pictures left on it. So we were, you know, I was scrambling to figure out what the hell was going on with this. And I got my developer to go debug it. And, you know, I'm just sitting here panicking, thinking, all right, how many other emails am I going to get about this? Well, none of that is helpful. You know, I basically had done the action that needed to do. What I really should have done is moved on to something else at that point. But I spent a lot of time stressing about it. Well, what else is there? Is there something else that we missed in there? Oh my God, how many customers are going to be emailing me? And all of that was just unproductive waste of time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that one of the things that brings out is, you know, anxiety and a sense of urgency, which are not the same thing, right?
No.
I think that a lot of times we think something is urgent just because someone else thinks it's urgent, like you're saying, right? So you get all these support requests. It's kind of a big deal, but you're going to do one thing that's logical and objective, get the ball rolling to solve it. But you don't need to have a frantic sort of sense about what you're doing. You need to take action and focus on taking action and not be all anxious and stressed about something that may on the surface seem like a very important thing or very urgent, but really might not be in the sense of your overall business, right?
Right, right. Yeah. When you have other outside things that keep telling you, hey, this is urgent, hey, this is urgent, hey, this is urgent, you keep getting off task. You keep, you know, avoiding that to-do list that you're doing right there. So a great term that I found on a startup site here was that you have to fight the tyranny of the urgent.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, email, perfect example, right? And I am so bad about this because I'm constantly trying to monitor support, and I've had to like force myself to basically go and shut email off after, you know, I'll check it first thing in the morning, I'll clear the support queue, and then I have to shut it off, and I try to go until after lunch. It rarely, I'll be honest, it rarely makes it until lunch.
Yeah.
But at least I get a, you know, an hour, hour and a half in there where I'm not as focused on email and I'm trying to do other stuff like catch up with my team and reorganize tasks and do customer development and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, when you've got these artificial outside things that are constantly like, hey, you should be doing something with me. No, no, I shouldn't. But, you know, there's a great comic from The Oatmeal. I don't know if you saw it, that talked about email, and it showed this email that looked like this blob of fat, and it was basically sitting on the guy's shoulder and constantly like telling him, hey, man, you should take a look at that phone. Hey, look, there's a Facebook update over there. I bet that's important. Hey, look, you know, I'll bet that real estate developer really wants to give you that timeshare. You know, just constantly like telling you about stuff that seems urgent but is completely unimportant. Ah, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, email is horrible. I don't do a very good job with email. Part of it's because I am on the go so much these days, you know, still with the day job. And so I check email all the time. But I think one of the things about this is I've conditioned a lot of my customers to expect that from me. So they email me, I get back with them within an hour usually. And if I had not done that initially, then that would not have been the case. So I could have said, hey, look, I'm busy most of the day. I'll check it in the morning and in the early afternoon, and that'll give you a, you know, 6-hour turnaround time. Other than that, don't expect much more than that. And if something is super urgent, call me.
Right, right. Which brings us to the hack, and that is you've just got to pick some times that you're not going to be doing anything but working on whatever your to-do list is. So that means you got to shut off the phone, and sometimes that might mean hiding it too, so you're not tempted to just reach over and turn it back on. Shut off your email, put on some music, headphones, whatever it is that helps you stay focused. You know, use the Pomodoro technique. I use a website called Focus at Will, which has like specifically vetted music that apparently stimulates the beta waves in the brain, or maybe it's the alpha waves. I don't remember. Whichever waves are the ones that get you into the focus, whatever. That's the ones that they supposedly stimulate. And that kind of helps me stay in the groove and get through my tasks and get things done.
So how does it work? Is it a sort of a web app that turns certain things off and controls part of your computer? Or is it just a timer with music on it that helps you focus?
Oh, it's much more of the latter. It's basically a website. You go to focusatwill.com. And then I bought their package. It's like $36 a year or something like that.
Okay.
And then you basically get access to all of their library. If you don't pay, I think you get access to 3 songs, and you'll get pretty sick of it fast. And it's not like the whole library has, you know, a whole wide variety of music. It's not like they're releasing new stuff weekly. Because the music is vetted and the music has to have certain qualities, they don't, you know, add a lot of new stuff all the time. But the ones that are there are really good, and it, you know, they've got a bunch of different stuff there. So it's like, and they have goofy names like Focus Spa and Alpha Chill and Coffee Shop Background and mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So whatever your thing is, you know, if it's got to be like high tempo music, or if it's got to be like, you know, a busy train station coffee shop sort of vibe, or if you just want some classical music, whatever it is, they've got it. And, you know, you find what that thing is, and then you just put it on and you set a timer, or you can let it go with no timer. And then whenever that period expires, you know, they'll pop up something on there and say, how focused was the session, you know? So it lets you get some self-feedback on it. I've never actually used the reports. I just basically use it for the music. But
yeah, right on. That's cool. That's cool. So, you know, something else that what this is kind of talking about is taking control of your time and your priorities and wielding the power of no and saying no to people and priorities that might not be on the top of your list. And this can mean a lot of different things to different people in different aspects or phases of their business. And it can mean anything from, no, I'm not going to answer email or take phone calls, or no, I'm not going to go to this meeting or join this conference call. Or even, no, I'm not going to take on this client or customer because they're not a good match for me. And I think that this, the even getting into the ladder, which I think is pretty advanced, is a real neat way to not just kind of focus yourself in your business and make sure that everybody's kind of going down the right road, but it also sort of optimizes the experience that you have and your customers have when you're happy about kind of everything that's going on in your business, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this is even more important for those of us who actually are splitting our time, because if you're doing your entrepreneurship on the side and you have a day job, if you're not wielding the power of no ruthlessly and viciously, you're basically going to end up pushing out the entrepreneur stuff, you know, implicitly, because it's not going to have quite as much as a priority as your day job, since the day job is currently generating revenue, for example. So, you know, it can be very difficult to say no to things that are the easy path to a fatter bank account, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think that to take it one step further, I think there's a lot of talk out there, and this is getting down a bit of a tangent, about valuing and pricing positioning, to where the more you say no, the higher price you can charge. And people will view you as an expert because you say, you know, hey, look, fuck you. I'm only available 6 hours a day, you know, 3 days a week, or I only take on clients at $10,000 a week. And don't even talk to me if you don't want to do that. People will line up to take you up on your offer if you position yourself as that, instead of a, you know, hey, I'm on Odesk for $5 an hour to do everything about your podcast you would ever want. Those people are just going to abuse the hell out of you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. In fact, I know somebody who specifically does this. So Brennan Dunn basically doesn't do regular consulting. And then for a brief period last year, he opened up his consulting, you know, he hung out his shingle for a little while because he needed to pay off some medical bills. But he basically made it very clear this was a limited time thing. And I think he was commanding like $10,000 a week for his work, mm-hmm. and basically filled up his docket like in no time flat, and had no problem making himself busy for that whole time that he was available. So he used that power of no, set up with the right clients who were willing to pay the fees that he wanted, and got exactly what he wanted out of it. So that does indeed work.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
It's a total paradox. It sounds like if you keep saying no, everybody's going to stop talking to you, but that's not what happens.
Yeah, if your value is there, of course.
If your value is there, right, yeah. I mean, if you're just, you know, a bozo standing on the corner with a sign and you're handing out free candy and you just start saying no when somebody says, can I have free candy? I mean, they're just going to go on to somebody else, right?
Yep. You know, and so the last phase of this really is setting yourself up for success, but then being accountable to yourself and to others around you in your organization or in your peer group.
Oh, accountability is huge. In fact, I would say this has probably been in the past two and a half years has been the number one motivating factor for me. So obviously, you know, I've been a member of a mastermind for a long time now, and we meet every 2 weeks, and I actually have had many panic attacks where I, you know, get maybe a week in from the last mastermind and then realize that I haven't done anything on my list, and then freak out and start working on my list like mad because I don't want to show up to the mastermind. I don't want to be that guy that's like, I didn't get anything done this week. Sorry, guys, you know. And, you know, the other guys in my mastermind group feel the same way. Like, they don't want to be the one that shows up and said, yeah, I didn't do anything. Because if you do that like two or three meetings in a row, people are going to be like, why are you in this mastermind? You know, why aren't you moving forward with your business? You know, it opens up a lot of tough questions. So you don't want to be that guy. And that accountability has made me more productive.
Yeah, that's neat. So definitely a shout out to Ken Wallace at mastermindjam.com. If anybody out there does not have a mastermind currently, Ken is matching entrepreneurs up with like-minded, you know, entrepreneurs in similar phases of their business to get into a mastermind group. So if you're not in a mastermind group, I can't recommend one enough either. I am in one and I'm joining a second one at this point, and they're great. And I view the podcast as a bit of a mastermind because we get on every week and talk about our businesses, and it's public. So that's even, you know, maybe one step further, but there's not as much feedback on it other than you, Dave. But there's definitely a lot of accountability for me to say, hey, you know, I'm launching Podcast Motor, or I have XYZ and we just did this or that with pricing. And it's out there for everybody. It's not just the three or four people in that mastermind.
Right. I mean, you and I would be flipping out if, like, we were the ones coming to the podcast each week. And then, like I said to you, so what'd you do on Podcast Motor? Well, I got shit done, actually. Oh, really?
That's
okay.
Great.
Well, that's awesome. So here's all the things I did on Support Vine. And yeah, I mean, you don't want to be that guy that's just sort of sitting there in the background, not doing anything. You want to be contributing and throwing out your accomplishments. And so having that accountability gives you motivation to do that. And of course, there's other ways to do it. So let's say, you know, gee, I don't have a mastermind, and if you're waiting for Ken to get back to you at mastermindjam.com, you know, there's lots of other things you can do. For example, just tell a friend that you are going to send them an email every week about what you've accomplished. And if they don't get that email from you, that they have permission to harass you, for example. Or you can use a service like followup.cc, so you can use their magic email addresses and say, you know, remind me in 2 weeks to send my mastermind updates or something like that. And that way you get a reminder to make sure that you're sort of just staying along in the goals, and you get that little touch point to check in. So, you know, there's lots of ways to hack it, but accountability is definitely a way to make sure that you're going to get successful.
Yeah. I'm going to add one to this, and it's not in our notes, but I use Trello a bit as an accountability tool. I have the standard, you know, things to do that I'm doing and are done silos, and I just keep everything in the done category. I don't ever archive them, and it's a huge column at this point, right? But it's nice for me to be able to look over there at times and say, wow, that's cool, I've done all this shit. I still have a dozen things over in the first and second columns, but I've done a lot already. It's nice just to motivate me a little bit. And going back to some of the things we talked about earlier with making lists and prioritizing and things like that, I look over and see some of the most important things I've done in the past, whatever, couple months. And it's really nice to see sometimes say, wow, the ball has gone a long way from where it started.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a big difference. Yeah. And Trello is a great tool for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's summarize then, so that everybody's got something for their list of things and hacks that you can use to sort of manage your inner chimp here. So obviously, if you've got your monkey mind as this primary enemy as a founder here, the ways that you can sort of work around that are detailing consequences to make sure that what you see isn't really as bad as you feel like it is. You can create lists of tasks at the end of the day for the next one so that you're organized the minute you walk in. If you have worrying thoughts, basically focus on an action to distract that monkey mind. And, you know, fight the urge to check things constantly, like your phone or texts or emails, by having these focus periods. So you can use things like the Pomodoro technique or just shutting off your email for a couple of hours. And be sure to wield the power of no to try to stop creating unnecessary tasks. And lastly, you want to try to get accountable to someone or something to maintain that motivation.
Yep. No, that's fantastic. And you know what I would ask is that in response to talking about this, because this is a very, you know, touchy, sensitive topic that a lot of people will probably relate to, one, Dave, I would like to ask you, what is kind of the one thing you remember as like a time or an instance where you really kind of struggled with this, with the chimp coming out and really being paralyzed by fear and inaction, and what did you do to overcome it?
Well, let's
putting
see.
Putting you on the spot big time.
Well, yeah, no, as you were saying that, I'm like, oh shit, he's going to ask me this question.
He's going to ask.
Yeah.
Well, and we're asking everybody. So I would love to see comments on the show notes for this episode. And let's share our experiences, because here's the thing. We're about to share our instances where we had challenges and we overcame them. I'm sure a bunch of other people will have similar ones, and someone out there will say, holy shit, I'm in this same situation that Billy Bob was just in last month. I'm going to do what he did.
Right, right. So I'd say that probably the biggest one that I remember in the recent past was the time after my Support Vine guy, the developer, had basically gone MIA on me, and I was trying to hire another guy, and I was in 2 weeks into the trial period and he wasn't working out. And I basically felt paralyzed while I was trying to find a new developer. And I was just so frustrated, and all of these negative thoughts kept coming up. I'm like, how am I going to get this done? And oh, where does this put me on my launch date? And how am I still going to get customers? And how can I get feedback? And all of this crazy stuff. And eventually, what I did to get myself out of that was to write down a complete set of tasks that I knew that the last guy was working on that still needed to get done that he hadn't recorded. And that kind of helped me put a boundary on what I thought was just this unfathomable, crazy process that still wasn't done. And suddenly it gave me a realization that I could actually put some estimates on these things, and I could put some and add it all up and then find out what it was going to take to get me to a release date. And then after that, I could start chopping stuff out that wasn't as important. And so suddenly I went from complete paralysis to, oh, well, it looks like when I get a developer hired that I can probably make some progress in about 3 months if I chop out all of this other stuff and I just focus on this set of features. So I'd say that's probably the one I would pick.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's awesome. So I'll share mine. Mine was a similar amount of time ago, maybe about 3 weeks ago. And it was at a time in Podcast Motor where we had a good number of initial customers and enough for me to manage decently. And then another kind of wave started coming in. And I started saying to myself, wow, I either can work full time in the business and never have the ability or flexibility to grow this thing, or I can just say, fuck it, I'm going to go hire a bunch of people and outsource almost everything and cut my margins a lot, but be able to work on the business and not in the business. And it was a scary thing, though, because you look at taking a very kind of sensitive artistic work that I've done in editing and writing and all these kind of things that are people are very particular about, and giving up control. And that was the thing that really paralyzed me, was giving up control of a very sensitive thing for my customers. And the way that I overcame that wasn't just kind of like hiring the best people or whatever. I hired 10 people 1 week.
Holy crap.
And this is, I took a page out of a book from a sales coach, and his name's Grant Cardone. And he's just like kind of a maniac sales coach. And his mantra is to take massive action. And basically it's exactly what we're talking about. And he says, whenever you're stuck and you don't know which way's up or which way's going to be the best thing for your business, go send 100 emails or make 20 phone calls in an hour. And just doing all that, whether it's the right thing or not, something is going to make sense out of all that. And that's exactly what happened. I went from not really knowing what I was doing and having two people on my team to we have 6 people on the team, adding 3 more here soon. And I have very clear focus about what each of them are doing and what my role in the business is now too. So I went from me and 1 or 2 other people doing everything and being kind of frantic about it to now setting myself up and the business up to be able to almost infinitely scale, because I know what that path and what that framework looks like. And I wouldn't have been able to do it if I didn't just say, all right, I'm going to throw caution to the wind and do something that probably doesn't make sense, but I'm going to do a lot of it. And that will put me in a different spot than I am right now.
Right, right. That was focusing on the action to get you past all the worries, and that was good.
Yeah. But it was scary.
yeah, it's scary as hell. There's no question about that.
But, I think it – and in both of our cases, the digital economy and the world that we live in with tools like Upwork, Odesk, and contractors and email and Slack – it allows for all of this so easy. You don't have to W-2 somebody and pay their insurance and all this kind of stuff. You can make some of these stupid decisions, and there's almost no ramifications if it doesn't work out.
Yeah. It definitely – there's greater flexibility than we've ever had before. 5 years ago, this was definitely not as easy as it is today.
Yeah. All right, so we kind of lifted the skirt and showed some of the things that really scared us and what we did to overcome them, and that's what I ask of everyone who listens to the show. So head over to roguestartups.com/episode20. Leave a comment in the comment section. Tell us about something that happened to you in your business recently that kind of stopped you in your tracks and scared you from doing something or doing what you thought was the most important thing for your business. How you prioritized it and took action and overcame that situation you were in. I can't wait to hear about this. We're going to report on this. We're going to summarize this in the next episode.
Yep. Anybody who puts a comment in this episode here, we'll definitely be talking about it. So we're looking forward to hearing what you guys have.
Awesome. All right, Dave. Thanks so much. That's a great talk. And we'll catch up next time.
All right. Sounds good.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.